to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but before we meet him, and this is going to be a treat, let's have a quick word from one of our sponsors. Here's a product I think we're all going to enjoy trying. It's called Libido Boost. Can you guess what it does? I can't road test it at the moment because my wife's still recovering from hospital. She's no good to me. But maybe on my behalf, you can have a go and road test it. Libido Boost. It's by our old friends at NutraHealth365.com. And you liked their anti-inflammatory joint health product. You liked their ImmuneX 365. Well, they've got this new product, Libido Boost, and it has got in it, well, some ingredients I've heard of. It's got ginseng extract, it's got ginkgo biloba leaf extract, it's got Ganoderma lucidum extract. It's also got maca in it. And I know about maca, not as in Paul McCartney. It's only got one C instead of two. Maca, I know, is very effective in that department. It's also got Damiana extract. Anyway, it's got eight natural ingredients in it altogether, and I can't guarantee it's going to work, but I haven't tried it. But I'll tell you what, I'm sure it's a lot less unpleasant than Viagra, which I can't stand. I'd rather not have sex than ever use big pharma erectile product, even if I need one, which I don't, by the way, so there. Anyway, you can get this stuff at NutraHealth365.com. It's called Libido Boost, and there's some kind of deal they're offering, which I can, if I look it up, hang on, it says, when you buy any two supplements, you get 10% off, and if you buy any three, you get 16% off. On top of that, you get free Royal Mail 2-day tracked delivery on every order. But I'd be really interested, not too much detail, but interested to see whether it works for you. You can get it from NutraHealth365.com, and it is called, self-explanatorily, Libido Boost. Good luck, chaps and chapesses. Enjoy. Welcome to the Delling Pod, Max Egan. Max, you've been one of the more requested guests that I've never had on the podcast, and I can't believe that it's taken me this long to get you on, because you're kind of a legend in what do you call our circles, conspiracy circles, awake circles, whatever. What's the term you use?
Well, they call it the truth movement. I just call it the resistance, the freedom movement. I don't know. Awake people. I don't know.
I like the resistance. I first came upon you when that horrible incident, when you were kind of driven out of Australia. You basically had to do a runner, didn't you, out of Australia, and the feds were out to get you.
Well, I just had an intuitive feeling that I should leave because I felt something bad was about to happen, and it turns out they came looking for me about 10 days after I left. And I think they were trying to set me up for something. Like they did a thing about a year later where they set up a couple of Queenslanders and set them up as right-wing extremists and all that sort of stuff. The trains, there was a shooting of a couple of police officers in central Queensland. And I think they were trying to set me up as something like that, some sort of a right-wing extremist. They'd approved a shooter's license for me, which I'd applied for like 14 months earlier and forgotten all about. Suddenly it arrived in the mail. And I thought, well, this is very strange for this to arrive now. And I think they were trying to set me up. And I would have been a perfect person for them to set up because of the amount of contacts that I've got in Australia. And if they could have painted me with that brush, then they could have painted everybody with that brush. And I just had this intuitive feeling that I had to leave, that it was going to be very bad, not just for me, but for everybody if I stayed there. And then, like I said, 10 days after I left, they went around to my sister's place and I said, we need to find your brother. He's been threatening to kill police officers, which was completely absurd. And then they shut down all my bank accounts. They shut down my PayPal, shut down my Patreon. I mean, they cut off all my finances. And, so I kind of left at exactly the right time, I would say.
It does sound like it was time
running.
To go.
Like it wasn't that I was, you know, they were after me and I had to flee. I just had this intuitive feeling that I should leave, and then they came for me. So yeah, you should always listen to your intuition, brother.
I should, Coco. Yeah. Where do you did it? I mean, I'd say that the arrival of the gun license was a big clue, but that must have set your antennae quivering. Was there anything else? I mean, how do you? So, I agree with you. Trust your gut. Trust your intuition. But how do you differentiate between kind of the monkey thoughts that we all have? You know, routine anxiety. And a clear signal saying, get the hell out of Dodge.
Well, it was almost like something pulling me at my solar plexus that I had to leave, you know. And I didn't want to. It was a very, very hard decision to make. I actually booked the flight twice. Like I went and I was just about to click OK and thought, nah, I won't do it. And then a week later, I just had this feeling, no, you've got to go. So I just did. And I don't know, I mean, you learn to differentiate these things. I mean, yeah, we all have these sort of quirky little thoughts sometimes. But it's like things saying, you know, you do something strange with your keys and you think, oh, I better stop doing that or I'm going to lose my keys. And then you lose them that day. You know, you didn't listen. You know, things like that over my life, I've just sort of learnt to listen to thoughts that I have and listen to intuitive messages that I have. And you kind of learn to differentiate. I think doing this work for so many years, you sort of learn to differentiate between crazy thoughts and real realizations. And so it just comes with experience, yeah. I guess. But I think everybody's got the ability to do it. And that was just what made me leave the country at the time when I did. And like the shooter's license arriving, it would have given me, like they wouldn't approve any gun licenses or anything. I couldn't go and buy any weapons. But the shooter's license would have given me the ability to be able to go and buy gunpowder and all sorts of stuff. I mean, they could have set me up with anything, bomb making or anything they wanted, really. And it just felt crazy that it had taken 14 months for them to approve this license. And I'd forgot that I'd even applied for it. It was that long. And I thought, well, if it's taken them that long to, and I've been out speaking at rallies and all sorts of stuff, obviously they know who I am. Why would they suddenly be approving this shooter's license for me? How can they use that? And what would I do if I were them? And I thought, well, I'd be the perfect patsy to set up because of the amount of contacts that I've got. You know, they could achieve a lot and further their game a lot and virtually shut down most of the resistance in Australia if they managed to get me and my computers and all my contacts. And I just thought, well, it isn't just about me. It isn't just what I want to do. It's time for me to go. And so I did.
Australia has a fine tradition of lone crazed gunmen, at least if you believe the official narrative. Who was the guy who went round picking up hitchhikers and murdering them? Was that real or was that a psyop?
I'm not sure. That was someone in Western Australia, in northern Western Australia. I'm not sure. It was quite a while ago. I can't remember the guy's name. I know who you're referring to, though. But yeah, that was Western Australia quite a number of years ago, maybe 20 years ago or something. Then, of course, we had the Port Arthur shooting and, you know, a lot of this sort of stuff. So, yeah.
The Port Arthur one, that was in Tasmania?
That was in Tasmania, yeah.
Which was completely fake, wasn't it?
Oh, it was totally staged. I mean, people died, sure, but it wasn't who they said. They used a patsy. And this guy's, you know, never been properly interviewed. He's never gone to trial. He's been locked up in solitary for the last, like, 20, 25 years. And, it seems to have... and that's what brought about gun confiscation in Australia. And there's so many red flags with that whole thing. When anybody who's looked into the Port Arthur massacre knows that there's red flags all over it. There's no way it happened the way the mainstream media told us. So, yeah, we do have a bit of a history of this sort of stuff.
Well, as I keep saying to quite a few of my guests... if I'd had you on my podcast 5 years ago, I probably would have been thinking, why am I talking to this nutcase? What is this false flag nonsense? How dare he suggest that the state would engage in these massacres or whatever against their citizens? The government would never do that. And now I'm like, yeah, obviously it's it. Of course the Of course, it wasn't as portrayed in the media. The media lied to us relentlessly. I was wondering, when were you ever a normie? Did you have a normal life before you kind of woke up?
No, I woke up when I was very, very young. I woke up when I was 4 years old to the fact that something was terribly wrong. And by the time I was eight, I was kind of reading encyclopedias and stuff, and I figured I was living in a madhouse. So I got kicked out of four high schools in my first 3 years of high school, and just became a musician. I thought, the world's crazy. I'll just step on the outside of society and make my own way through the world, you know. And I was a musician and a sound engineer and worked with bands and that sort of stuff for 20, 30 years. And then when the 9/11 attacks happened, like so many others, I thought, well, actually, this is serious. This is the big event we've been waiting for. And, you know, researching all this stuff had always been a hobby, and music had been my main forte. And then suddenly when 9/11 happened, they kind of switched positions, and this became my main forte, and music became my hobby. And it was interesting because all of the things I'd done through my music life had given me all the skills, like being on stage, talking in front of lots of people, and video editing skills and audio skills and all sorts of stuff. All of these things that I thought were unrelated gave me the ability to do exactly what I'm doing now. And it was interesting how that all went down. But no, I never had a normal lifestyle. I was always kind of on the outside of things, always on the outside of society, observing society. And I had very few close friends. I mean, very difficult to talk to people about these things. I used to try to wake people up when I was at school and tell them where we're going. You know, the government's just bringing in more legislation all the time. And every time they create a new law, they actually create a new crime. And suddenly there's all this crime in the world because of all the legislation that exists that prevents you doing everyday activities, but suddenly they become a crime now. You know, and we're heading for a complete totalitarian society if we don't pay attention to what's happening. And I pointed out how, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote in, we've got essentially a functional rotational dictatorship. There might be small changes with different parties and small policy differences, but ultimately it's always marching towards the overall agenda. That never changes. You know, and we're waiting for this big event to usher in their New World Order endgame. And when 9/11 happened, I thought, well, here it is. And it's interesting, like after the 9/11 attacks, I met people that I'd gone to school with 30, 40 years earlier, and they said to me, wow, everything you used to warn us about in high school, this is where the world is now. You know, how did you know? And I said, well, you know, it's kind of obvious, and it's always been obvious to me. And so, yeah, I mean, I never had any real normal lifestyle at all. I had a terrible childhood because I was awake and I thought, nobody's talking about anything that means anything. They're all mad. I'm living in an insane asylum. These people are just asleep. They're talking about useless, irrelevant rubbish all day. You know, the world is very different to what it's perceived to be. And I just couldn't understand why nobody else could see it. It always seemed to me that it would be very easy and simple to change things if people would just become aware of the problem. And even when they did become aware of it, and I'd talk to people, they'd just go in one ear and out the other. And so I just thought, okay, well, I'm just going to become a guitar player and go and watch the freak show from over there, you know? So that's what I did.
And, but okay, so you knew this stuff when you were four, but you obviously at that stage, you hadn't been down all the rabbit holes. You weren't aware the corrupt system operates. What was the most surprising thing you discovered on your journey? What made you go, blimey, I can't believe that one.
Well, when I was four, it was the whole concept of we had to buy land. I was out in the national park with my mum, and I said to her at the end of the day, well, let's come and live here. This is so much better than town. And she said, well, we can't. And I said, why not? And she said, well, we don't own the land. I couldn't understand what you had to own land. I couldn't understand. That was when I first found out that we actually had to pay to be alive. We had to pay to put a roof over our heads and all this sort of stuff. I couldn't understand it. And then when I was 8 years old, I started looking at encyclopedias and things. I was looking at the pyramids and I started looking at ancient history. I was always fascinated by archaeology. I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was like 5, 6 years old. And when I discovered all that sort of stuff, I'm thinking, well, there's all these great mysteries all over the world. You know, why are they mysteries? I mean, one great mystery is a great mystery, but you're two, okay, three, four, five. They're just everywhere. There's monuments all over the world. And obviously, history is not what we've been told, or these great mysteries wouldn't exist. And if I can see this, well, how come they haven't seen it? And I thought, well, of course they have seen it. So then you start going down the rabbit hole and you start realizing that everything's covered up. You know, over the years, of course, you go down the UFO rabbit hole, you start buying all the magazines and all this sort of stuff. And you just realize that everything's a lie. Everything's a cover-up. Everything that they tell us is fiction, you know. And when the television was invented and all, I mean, when we got our first TV in the home. And I thought either the rest of the world's stupid or they know the same things that I know and they're covering it up. And but like I said, it was kind of, it was like a spy novel that I was reading in the background of my life, looking at all this stuff. And, you know, we're waiting for this big event to happen and this new world order to happen. And I never really expected it to happen in my lifetime. You notice is what's going on. You know, there's this dark, shadowy reality going on behind the scenes. And you know that they want to usher in this ultimate control grid, you know, like George Orwell's 1984 or Huxley's Brave New World, but you just don't expect it to happen in your lifetime. When the 9/11 attacks happened, it really woke me up to how serious this was, because I was expecting that would happen maybe now, like when I'm 60 or 70 or something like that, you know. But no, it happened then, and that was a big shock for me. Because I saw that actually all this stuff that I've been looking at is important, and perhaps I should have been talking about it a lot more than what I had been previously, you know. So, I mean, it's difficult to find one point that caused the penny to drop and the veil to fall down. I mean, it was an ongoing thing over my whole lifetime. I could always see this, but like I said, I never expected it. I never expected to see the culmination of this whole conspiracy, this grand conspiracy, to happen in my lifetime. So that's what made me shift off my path, was the 9/11 attacks. And it just put everything else down and focus on this and getting the word out to people, because I perceived the human race to be in a state of clear and present danger. And it's just escalated from that point. And where we are now is absolutely freaky. I mean, what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years, it's like it's moving at 3 times the speed now. So yeah, it was just an ongoing process. There was never really one moment. But I mean, the big part was the pyramids and all the mysteries, and that's where I saw that, okay, there's a deliberate cover-up going on here. All of this stuff can't be lying all over the world, and they can't see what I see. I think anybody with eyes to really look at it can see that this is a deliberate cover-up, and that history is a lie. And that was a big moment for me. That's when I was like 8 or 10 years old.
But you must be feeling a lot less lonely now. I mean, the last 4 years, they have kind of accelerated the awakening. I mean, look, you've got me on your team. I wasn't there 5 years ago.
Well, COVID and all of this sort of stuff's really woken a lot of people up. The fact that they could just do what they did over the last 4 years and get away with it. I mean, when COVID happened, they announced it. As soon as they said, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, I went, here it is. This is it. They're going to lock us all down. They're going to take all our rights away. They're going to bring out mandatory vaccines and all the things that they did. I actually managed to get out of the country like 2 weeks before, or maybe 1 week before all the mandatory vaccines and stuff came in. I wouldn't be able to leave if I'd left it another week. I wouldn't have been able to get out of the country. And even when you had to ask permission to leave, to me, that was a pretty good... That's when I started thinking, actually, it's time to leave. If I've actually got to ask permission to get out of the country, then that's a good reason to go now, you know? So, yeah.
I tell you what really, really confirmed my worst suspicions about everything during COVID. It was actually the pandemic. I hate calling it COVID because that's kind of their term, isn't it? But... I don't know whether you know, I used to be a mainstream media journalist, and I used the whole time I worked in the mainstream media, and I was really quite successful at it, you know, quite a prominent journalist, you know, people knew my name and stuff, my byline. I genuinely thought that I believe the story you get told in the movies about how, you know, the maverick journalist pursuing the truth without fear or favor and getting there in the end. It never struck me that I was part of this orchestrated lie machine. It never occurred to me that this was just pure propaganda. And so I started looking at what was going on in Australia. And I'm of a generation which was brought up to believe that Australia, it's the lucky country, it's Crocodile Dundee, it's no worries, mate, it's put another shrimp on the barbie, it's you know, it's great, it's the sort of place you'd love to go to, and maybe if you wanted to get away from any tyranny that might evolve in the world, Australia and New Zealand would be the place to go. So I was looking at the reports, they weren't very well reported, but you could find them on the internet, of women having a cup of coffee in the park in Sydney, being kind of threatened with arrest by the cops, and cops stopping cars going outside the 5 mile exclusions, you know, traveling further away from their home than 5 miles, and having the windows smashed in, and people being, grannies being tear gassed on demos. And I was waiting for all my colleagues, all my respected colleagues, the kind of people who I thought would be fighting in the trenches with me when, you know, if ever it kicked off, if ever global tyranny came down on us. These guys, you know, Charles Moore, the former editor of The Spectator and now distinguished columnist on, you know, on the Telegraph and stuff, or Douglas Murray, or any, name any kind of conservative, outspoken columnist. I was waiting for their articles saying, what the fuck is happening in Australia? Yeah, Australians are pretty much like us, but with a slightly funny accent and better coffee and a hotter climate. But apart from that, Australians are us. And what's happening? But instead of talking about this stuff, they were just, la la la, nothing's happening. And I realized then that all those media colleagues that I thought were like me, they were interested in the truth and, you know, interested in being cross about the things that to get cross about, were just doing what they were told. They were obeying orders, I suppose. I don't know, why were they not writing about this stuff?
Well, you know, a lot of people, I mean, you can't even really blame half of them. A lot of people think the world is the way it appears on the surface. They think that's the way things run. They think that there's difference in the political parties. They believe the stories that we hear of these, you know, terrible countries doing terrible things and terrorist organizations and all the stuff that they tell us. They think it's all true. You know, and they just look at things on that surface perspective. There's not a lot of deep thinkers left anymore. I mean, television and mainstream media and the big conglomerates of mainstream media. I mean, look at the news now, where people get their news from. Like the Associated Press and Reuters, basically, and they're both run by the same people. You know, you've got very, very few sources of information anymore, and a lot of people just believe things are the way they are on the surface. A lot of them are bought and paid for. A lot of them are paid off, I would think. They're part of the big club, and we're not in it, as George Carlin put it. But a lot of people simply can't see below the surface, and their cognitive dissonance won't allow them to look below the surface. I remember even when I was trying to tell my mother about some of these things, she'd say, look, even if it's true, I don't want to know. Just leave me to enjoy my life. Let me have my television and my newspaper on the weekends, and, you know, I'm good. I don't want to know. You know, and a lot of people just like that. And they don't want to admit that they are wrong. You know, I've got too much invested in the system being the way it appears on the surface because they pushed this for their whole life. You know, so a lot of them just don't want to see it, I think. And they're scared to see it. They're scared of how it might make them feel. They're scared of actually lifting their voice up and being a voice of dissent, you know, because they just can't handle the consequences that are going to come with that, you know. And perhaps they get a little knock on the door and a little letter in the mail and a little phone call or whatever as well and say that, you know, you need to be not thinking outside the box too much. So, you know, I think there's very few people that are actually awake. I mean, it's almost like there's very few people on Earth that are actually people. The rest of them are just NPCs, just programmed robots that do what they're told and think what they're told to think. I mean, anybody who's gone through that education system, the more educated you are, the more letters and numbers you've got after your name, the more brainwashed you are. And, you know, real independent journalists who became journalists because they like to think outside the box and they like to form their own opinions and they like to analyse things and put their perspective forth. These are very, very rare in the world today. And you're one of the ones who, I guess, has got that ability to be able to think still and think for yourself. It's a very dangerous thing, thinking for yourself. You know, you've got to, you know, abide by the party line. I mean, that's what the education system's all about. The education system, you know, purposefully weeds out any hint of creative thought in the students that are coming through it. You know, you're taught to regurgitate on command whatever you read in the book. Don't ever think outside the box. That's why I got kicked out of so many schools, because they'd be starting to teach me something, and I'd say, excuse me, I've just read a book on this topic, and what you're presenting us with is the most commonly accepted theory. It isn't known to be a fact at all. Why aren't you opening it up for discussion and allowing us to talk about these things? I mean, I came to school here to actually get educated and taught how to think, not be convinced of what to think. And that's what you're doing to me. You're not educating me. And this isn't what I came to school for. You know, you're just training me to be a little cog in the big machine. And, of course, by saying that, you get low grades, you don't pass. You get low grades, you don't pass. You'll never make it. You'll never get into a journalistic organisation because you've got such low school grades. So people are basically taught and pushed down this corridor. And once they get there, they've got so much invested in the world being the way it appears on the surface that they're scared to think outside the box and they're scared to lift their voice and say anything, you know. It'll be the nail that's sticking up that they come along with a hammer and bang down. You know, they don't want to rock the boat. I always thought I was here to rock the boat. I think that's why a lot of people actually came here, was to rock the boat, because the boat definitely needs rocking. You know, so, I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, it just, you know, the last 4 or 5 years have certainly, you know, separated the wheat from the chaff anyway. And we've got to see just how many people are really saying the truth. All these voices get silenced and pushed out of mainstream anyway. I've been banned, like, everywhere. Like, I must be the most banned person and on the internet. Like, I'm banned on YouTube, banned on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Vimeo, on SoundCloud, on even on MeWe, on Getter, on iHeart. So many things, so many places. I've been banned 4 times on Twitter, or X as it's called now. They just reinstated my account the other day, but now no one can follow me. You know, I've watched the followers build up to like 500 in a period of a couple of hours, then drop back to zero. And this has happened like over and over again in the last 2 days since they put me back on. Anybody I follow on Twitter, I go back an hour later, my following count is down to zero again. So, you know, what Elon Musk said was freedom of speech, but not freedom of reach, which of course means it's not freedom of speech. So, you know, they just, it separated the wheat from the chaff, and I think that's just the way it is. But thankfully, there are a lot of people waking up as well. A lot of people just out there, just people that aren't in the journalistic profession or any of this sort of stuff. We've seen a huge rise of independent journalists, which is just people going out there and putting their opinion out there. You know, and people have been scared to do that, but now, you know, what the situation that we're in kind of dictates that you must. If you can see what's going on, you kind of have a responsibility to talk about it now. A lot of these guys have got cushy jobs. They've got big paychecks that are coming in. And, of course, they're living to their means. They've got some expensive house in London or whatever. They've got to pay their rates and do all this sort of stuff. Last thing they want to do is rock the boat. And it's unfortunate, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah. Just briefly, I totally accept and agree with your analysis of why it is that normies think the way they do. But in the example I gave you, I wasn't even asking of my colleagues that they should sort of recognize that the world is a, you know, a conspiracy against them. All I was asking them to do was to just glance across Australia and go, well, this is weird. This is not normal. Maybe I should write just, you know, a few hundred words about it saying this is not normal. But they wouldn't even do that. They didn't even
notice. Just ask the question. Just ask the question, please. But, yeah, no, they won't. They're scared to. I mean, the whole COVID scamdemic, the way it came out and the rules that were coming in place, it was pretty scary for a lot of people. And a lot of them probably thought viruses were real. They probably thought the police were doing a good job of getting the people, you know, under control, because if they don't, then they're going to spread the disease. We had people like that in Australia. There were people there. There were protests on the border, Queensland, New South Wales border. And we had people in Queensland worried that they were going to bring the virus across the border. And like, it's just like, it's the one town. It's across the street. You can't seriously believe if someone crosses the street, suddenly you're going to die. I mean, what have they done to make you think this way? But a lot of people do. They watch the TV. They watch movies like Outbreak, and they believe all the virology stuff and all the stuff the doctors tell them. You know, I mean, when I broke my foot in 2020, I went to the hospital to get a cast on my foot, and they're looking at me going, "We've got no medical records for you. Like, we can see you came in with a nail through your foot about 20 years ago. You came in with a nail through your finger about 15 years ago. You seem to like shooting nails into your body, but we've got no medical records for you, and you're just one of these incredible people who don't get sick." I said, "Well, that's because I don't take pharmaceuticals and I don't take vaccines." And they just kind of looked at me, you know. But a lot of people, I mean, they do this. They go down, they fill them full of vaccines. They say, "Well, what's that?" People go for a checkup when they feel great. They just go in for a checkup, and the doctor says, "Well, you've got high blood pressure, you've got this, you've got that." And they start giving them drugs, you know, which messes up with their cognitive function. And a lot of people, like I said, they've got so much invested in that reality being real. For you to tell them, look, you've been poisoning yourself the whole life. Now, doctors are just basically killing people with allopathic medicine, you know, and it's a big thing for a lot of people. It's something they simply don't want to face because it means that the last 30, 40 years of their life, they've been living a complete lie, you know, and they just don't want to deal with it. So, you know, when the government comes out and tells them that there's a pandemic and everyone's going to die if we don't stay home for 2 weeks and put a face mask on and take this injection, they just believe it. They swallow it because, you know, it's like they say, you know, the bigger the lie is, the more likely people are to believe it. And, you know, when people realize that this whole system is a lie, the whole concept of government authority, all this stuff is a lie, it's just too big for a lot of them. But, yeah, I mean, like you say, you think at least they'd ask the question, isn't this a little extreme, what they're doing over there? But, oh, no, they just go along with it. But, like, again, a lot of people probably thought the police were doing the right thing, they were doing a good job, and these people were irresponsible. You know, they're endangering people by not taking their vaccine or whatever. So, you know, it's just the programming, brother.
Yeah. I went a few years ago to my Gordy, which is a reunion. Oxford and Cambridge, they call them Gordies. And every 10 years, say, you go back and you see the people from your year group and the year above, maybe. And I remember when I was at Oxford, I used to think of myself as being, you know, at best average compared to the bright brains all around me. And I, you know, I felt like a slight something of an imposter of being among all these incredibly brilliant people. And when I went back to my Gordy, I have to say, I felt so much the smartest person in the room. I mean, a lot of these people were way successful, you had Kate Bingham, for example, who was in my college, and she was in charge of rolling out the vaccine program in the UK. She was the kind of the interface between the government and the pharmaceutical industry. And I had nothing to say to these people because they were all like functionaries in the Babylonian court. You know, they passed the qualification test to enable them to be administrators for the people who run the world, and they were very happy with that. They were very happy with their money and their lifestyles and stuff, and they didn't question. And I thought, you people, you've had the supposedly the best education in the world, and you're thick as pig shit.
Yeah, like I said, they've got too much invested in the world being the way it appears on the surface. They've gone through their whole life. They've got all these degrees and all these positions of power and authority and, you know, promotions and all sorts of stuff. But they can't come out now and just say, "Hey, actually, this is wrong," because they know that if they do, they'll get sacked. They'll get blacklisted. Yeah. And they're going to lose their expensive house. They're not going to be able to pay their bills, you know, because that's the way the world functions. And as long as they're good and they're looked after and they've got their servants, and they've got their fancy front door, you know, they don't care about the rest of it. You know, even if it's right, I don't want to know. I'm good. Just leave me alone, like my mother. You know, they've just got too much invested in it. And like I said, it's kind of really sorted the sheep from the wolves and the wheat from the chaff. But I think it's getting to the point now we're seeing more and more people speaking out because these people are realizing that actually their head's on the chopping block the same as everybody else. You know, this system is very unforgiving. What they're putting in place is very unforgiving. Even a lot of the people that have been rolling out all the surveillance stuff, the 5G, the facial recognition, the biometrics, all this sort of stuff, are realizing that they're not going to be safe from it either. Even the digital currency, the CBDC, the banksters that have been running the world and controlling the world's finances are realizing that they're going to be locked out of the picture as well. It doesn't matter. Everybody is becoming a second-class citizen. They're kind of splitting it into a two-tier society where you've got the rulers and you've got the serfs. And they are only separated by this brick wall of armor-clad stupidity known as the police force. And they've lowered all the induction rates on the police forces around the world as well. Like in Australia, if you score over 104 on the IQ test on the police induction exam, you won't get accepted because they don't want anyone too intelligent in there. They just want people smart enough to do the paperwork but not really think about what they're doing. And
Is that true?
That's true, yeah. You can actually fail the induction exam if you score too high on the IQ test.
I thought you were going to tell me that 104 was the minimum entry point. But
well, you would think so, but people say, oh, no, 104, that's actually quite intelligent. No, it isn't. Where are they teaching you that? You know, that's a blockhead. 104 IQ is a blockhead, you know. But that's what they've got in Australia. I would suggest that they're doing it to other police forces around the world as well. You know, and that's a big part of the problem. So, you know, they're splitting everything into two classes, the rulers, the ultra elites, and then everybody below them with the police there to keep them in line. And the police aren't there to preserve society or protect people. They're there to enforce legislation, enforce law. No matter how corrupt that law is, they won't think about it because they're in this big boys club and they've got all this paperwork to fill out and they believe they're important because they're wearing this uniform with a little badge and all sorts of stuff like that. And a lot of them seriously believe that, you know, if you're not wearing a mask, you are endangering people's lives. And, you know, they're not real bright. They're just not real bright. And this has been delivered. If you look at the IQ drop over the last 20, 30 years, 40 years, even in the education system, you know, they lower the passing grades all the time. So more people get through, otherwise their school looks bad. So society becomes a little bit more stupid. And over a period of 30 or 40 years, I mean, from when I was at school to what they're teaching kids in school now, you've got kids coming out of American high school, going through high school and going into college, coming out of college, going to get a job in a hardware store, and they've got to watch an instruction video on how to operate a tape measure, for God's sake. And that's true. You know, so, I mean, that says a lot about the loss of IQ over the general society. And when you apply that to the police force, well, it's no wonder that we get this brutality. It's no wonder we're in the situation that we're in because people are trained not to think anymore. If you want to find the answer to anything, don't think about it. Don't reason. Just go and search on Google and you get the response that we've put there for you, which may be true and may not be true, but it's what the government wants you to believe. You know, and people will just take that at face value, unfortunately. That's what's happened to the world.
Well, given that you've been down the rabbit hole longer than almost any of us, you must have worked out by now. What's the deal? Who runs the world? Who's in charge of this stuff?
Well, there's a small group of people in a little country in the Middle East who wear small hats that have a big say in what goes on around the world. I mean, the United States at the moment is essentially a vassal state of Israel. Israel's carrying out a massive genocide in the Middle East and is now moving that on to Lebanon. And what they're doing in Gaza, I mean, to say this is self-defense, no, it isn't. This is a genocide. To claim it's anything but a genocide, quite frankly, at this stage, is completely ludicrous. It's an open genocide. And they control all the United States. They control a lot of British government. They control a lot of the European government. And they're expanding Israel to greater Israel, which is why they're bombing Lebanon, they're bombing Damascus, bombing Syria. They want to take over that whole region. A lot of what's going on in Ukraine is related to these people as well. I mean, whether there is some evil force behind that, you know, people say, oh, it's the Jews, it's the Jesuits, it's the Freemasons, it's the, you know, Illuminati. It's all the one thing. It's all the one mechanism. You know, I look at the world these days, I don't really look at it as governments and nations competing with each other. It's more of a multinational, multi-generational criminal cabal masquerading as a system of governments and nations, which puts all their people against each other all the time. You know, don't leave England. We've got all everything together here. You know, we'll protect you from the other countries that want to come and invade you, you know. And the other countries don't want to come and invade you. They don't care about the English people. They're busy doing their own things. It's the governments that you need to worry about. So you need your government to protect you from the other governments, you know. And they all work together. They all say the same thing. Doesn't matter what country you're in. And all of it is leading towards the same place it's always been leading, which is about centralized control, you know, the United Nations, this and that. Create all the excuses for centralized control. The United Nations is essentially a united dictatorship because you've got the United States and Israel have the power of veto over everybody else. So you can have all these countries vote for one thing, then the United States would just put up their hand and say veto. And that's it. It's all over. We're going to do what the United States wants. And when you understand the United States is completely run by the state of Israel, well, you start to see why things are happening the way they are. You know, and of course, that's called anti-Semitic, saying that. You know, but you look at these people. These people have been kicked out of 109 countries 1,030 times over the last 200 years or 2,000 years. You know, it gets to a point where if you've got a drunk who's kicked out of 109 pubs in your town 1,030 times, at what point do you say there might be something wrong with this guy rather than blaming all the hotels that are kicking him out, you know? And, you know, if the people of Israel, the guys with small hats, want to do what they're doing, well, that's great. Do it on your own turf, but don't control all of our governments and lead it to the direction that you're going, you know? So it's a bit of a problem, you know? The whole concept of anti-Semitism and the whole concept of these being people who are above the law allows them to carry out all sorts of atrocities, and they are in control of the entire Western system. They are who is leading us into World War III right now. That's, you know, look at some of the worst Holocausts that have happened in history, like Holodomor, Bolshevism. These are all run by the same people. The LGBTQ movement, this is run by the same people, the transgenderism. The slave trade was all run by the same people, you know. So it gets to a point where, you know, I've got to call these guys out and say these guys are doing a lot of heinous stuff and just risk being called anti-Semitic for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, fancy even having to invent a word like anti-Semitic to silence people that are complaining about your actions. What exactly are you doing wrong that requires the invention of a word like this? You know, and why have you been kicked out of so many countries? What is it that is so? Is it just because people are anti-Semitic, or actually are you doing something which warrants your expulsion from these countries? Yes, yeah. They are, you know.
So, yeah, I mean, I've pondered this question a lot, and I've come up with the same, you know, the same loose names, the Illuminati. It's the Jesuits. It's the tripartite power system between Washington, D.C., which controls the world's politics, and the City of London, which is finance, and Rome, which is religion. And then there are there are people who say, no, it's the Jesuits. You don't. And then there are people who say, no, it's the City of London, and you don't realize. And then there are people who say, yeah, it's the 13 satanic bloodline families. And then there were those who say, no, there are families even more powerful than the satanic bloodlines. They are the black nobility, and you've got the grey pope and the black pope and the white pope. So you're giving me a particular take on this, that, the, you know, it is, well, the people calling themselves the Jews. I'm not even sure that I believe that this term has any validity. Yeah. It's a kind of. It's when you go down the rabbit hole, you think, well, hang on a second. This term was coined in, it doesn't seem to have any kind of geographical or historical basis. And you look into the history of the Jews and you realize that the people who call themselves Jews, that 90% or more are the Ashkenazim, are essentially descendants of the Khazarians who converted to Judaism in the 9th century, I think.
Yeah.
Which means that they're no relation of the children of Israel.
No, they're not. None at all. And the fact that they're God's chosen people is a complete lie. I mean, even if you're a Christian, you look in the Bible and Christ said, you know, the Jews, those who say they are Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. You know, I mean, it's all there in the Bible.
So I get that, Max. But can I just ask you, because this is what puzzles me. Okay, so say the baddies are the descendants of, or at least a significant chunk of the baddies are descendants of the people who converted to Judaism in the 9th century. That's the 9th century AD.
Mm-hmm.
That still leaves a whole heap of history beforehand which are not explained. It seems to me that saying it's the Jews, whoever the Jews are, ain't enough, because there's loads and loads of stuff going back at, you know, the Romans, for example. I'm sure it's the case. Do you disagree with me that some of the people who run the world now, many of them, I suspect, are descendants of the kind of families who had their houses on the Palatine and Capitoline hills in ancient Rome? They pull the strings too. So it's not just, I don't believe it's just Israel.
It's like I said, if you look at the Jesuits and the Freemasons and the Jews and the Illuminati and all these sort of different groups, Club of Rome, whatever, realize it's all the one thing. These are different factions, basically of the same group, you know, all leading towards the same direction. An interesting thing with the Judaic prophecies, I mean, whoever has, and I wouldn't argue that there's certain factions that have been vying for power. Yeah. You might have the Jesuits, you might have the Club of Rome, you might have the Freemasons, but there's this other group, and it's a power struggle going on at the top. And at the moment, these are the guys who's ruling the roost. I mean, you've just got to look at the world, look at the banking system, look at what's been done to Europe, look at the Kalergi plan to flood Europe with migrants that was put forth in 1923 or something like that. We're seeing all of this unfold in the world today. These guys have definitely got the upper hand at the moment. And you look at some of their philosophies, like their need to destroy Amalek. And Amalek is basically everybody who's not a Jew. You know, it's basically America, Western society. You know, people will argue excuse me?
Well, when they talk about Amalek, they've basically hijacked the Old Testament. These people aren't even from the Old Testament. They are claiming position. They've usurped the position of the children of Israel and are claiming Amalek is actually the people who are the real descendants of the children of Israel.
Yeah, exactly. And you really look at even what the word Israel means, which was simply a belief in the one true God. It was never related to a state or a place in the Middle East. But what you've got to understand is that all of the people that have grown up into this, what these people are educated, what they're, you know, these are the most programmed people in the world, you know, and they're literally reveling in these genocides that they're carrying out, and they seriously believe that they are God's chosen people. They believe all the education. I mean, it only takes a few generations to completely change the mindset of people, and they seriously believe it. Whether they are or not, you'll never be able to convince them that they're not, because this is the whole meaning of their being, you know, through the education system they had. They're taught this from birth. And they grow up into families that were taught that from birth. So you never, and they got their own history books. They got all, you know, everything that they write. And it's all designed for them to lead them down this path, you know. So, you know, their belief system, their belief that they must do this, they seriously believe they're doing God's work. You know, like Benjamin Netanyahu seriously believes that he's one of his purposes in life is to usher in the Jewish Messiah. You know, he seriously believes it. Even a guy I was speaking to recently who's actually done a lot of artwork and a lot of IT work, and he used to work with Ivana Trump, Trump's first wife. He asked her about Trump one day. I asked her, Ivana, what's going on with Donald? And she said, he believes he's on a mission from God. And that was back in 2015 he said that. He believes he's on a mission from God.
Which God, though?
Exactly, that's the question, you know.
But
the thing is, they seriously believe this stuff. They seriously believe it, and that is the problem, you know. That's the problem, is their belief system. They've just got this tunnel vision and this focus that they must do this, and that it's all about Israel. They believe Israel is the state of Israel. And even when you start really looking at it, there was a great book that came out by a lady called What was her name? Dr. Lorraine Day. Unfortunately, she died last year. Have you ever heard of Lorraine Day?
Oh, I think I have. Yes, remind me.
Well, she put out a book called Who Rewrote the Bible?
Ah, yes.
It talked about what Israel actually means. There was a man in the Bible, a biblical figure called Jacob.
He was a Jacob
very deceptive man. And the angel came down and renamed him to Israel. And when he became a good man, he started to believe in the one true God. And so they renamed him to Israel. And he started preaching that doctrine to people. And those people who followed him and believed that doctrine in the one true God were called Israelites. And then they were waiting for and these were essentially, the Israelites were essentially Christians because they were waiting for the coming of the Messiah. When Jesus was born in Judea, if he even existed, I mean, this is another,
For
argument's sake, we'll say he did. Yeah, well, the people will want to debate this for hours on end. But anyway, this man was born in Judea, and he was saying the same thing that the man Israel was saying, that there's one true God, blah, blah, blah. And then the people that followed him were called Yehudi or Judaic or Judahites because they believed what this man Jesus was saying. So Yehudi, Israelites, Judaics, and all these people kind of got combined into one thing, Jews. But in the original Bible, the word Jew didn't exist.
That's true.
The word Jew was actually inserted into the Bible by King James when he rewrote the Bible in the 1700s, I think it was. Maybe the
1400s. 1611.
Yeah, back then anyway. The word Jew was actually inserted into the Bible then to replace all those terms, Israelite, Yehudi. This was all just became Jews. And the word Gentile never appeared in the Bible before that time either. Before that, the word was nations. So you think about that. You had people who followed the belief in the one true God or people who followed the law of the state, the nations. And that's what it was. So really, when you look at the world today, I mean, even the formation of the state of Israel, this is completely against what an Israelite is supposed to be. An Israelite doesn't believe in the state. An Israelite believes in the one true God. And the Israelites and the Judahites and the Yehudi weren't a race. These were Moroccans, Mongolians, Turks, there were all sorts of people. They simply had this belief that there was this one true God and that they shouldn't follow the law of the state, they should follow the law of God, which was basically do no harm, do the right thing in all that you do, rather than following the law of the state. But by changing the word Gentile to the word, or by changing the word nations to the word state, suddenly they got this different, because the Israelites and the Yehudi were basically those who chose God over the law of the state. And they flipped that, and suddenly the Jews, which was Yehudi, Israelites, blah, 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 became God's chosen people. Rather than those who chose God, it was those chosen by God. So they flipped it. They flipped the whole thing. So you got these Khazarians come along, and they see this whole religion going on, and they think, well, this is a great, how do we get a home? Because these were wandering gypsies all through Europe, getting kicked out everywhere. How can we claim ownership of some place? Well, okay, Jews, Judea, this place in Israel, we can claim that, we are native to that place. And over the centuries and over the years, they've convinced themselves that this is true, that they are related to King David. They are descendants from the ancient Israelites. You'll never be able to convince them that they're, if anything, they come from the Khazarian bloodline, the Ashkenazi bloodline. There was even a book put out by a scholar, a professor of history in Tel Aviv University, called Shlomo Sand, put out a book called The Invention of the Jewish People, because there are no Jewish people. And he put out a second book called The Invention of the Land of Israel, from Holy Land to Homeland. And this guy's a history professor in Tel Aviv. He's a Jew, so he's very hated. He's very hated in Israel, but it's great what he put out. He's actually hoping that people are going to actually look outside the box and look how this whole race is literally an invention.
Yeah. It is, of all the rabbit holes I've investigated, I think the whole Christianity thing and its sort of side shoots is the most interesting and complex, because it embraces things like the translations of the Bible, which you just mentioned, the fact that we don't even have copies of the original, the Hebrew, in which the original Old Testament was written. All we have is the Masoretic texts, which were written in a new form of Hebrew in, I think, the about the year 1000 or year 900 AD. And we have the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the earlier version in Hebrew that we can no longer see. All these, and you've got the issue of the Edomites. I mean, okay, so my personal theory, and you know, I don't know, I'm still learning. My personal theory is that we are all descendants of the original children of Israel, because the children of Israel, the 12 tribes got spread out. They got exiled. They migrated across Northern Europe. They became the Scythians. They became the Etruscans. Some of them ended up in Wales. But the arch enemies of the children of Israel were the Edomites, the Canaanites, the Philistines, all these tribes that they displaced. Where do they end up? Well, they too spread out. They had their own diaspora. And I think it's quite possible that, for example, the Khazarians are actually descendants of, they're basically Edomites, who were the enemies of the, but we don't know, because inevitably this field of study is suppressed by the people who have a vested interest in preserving the status quo and using terms like anti-Semitism and also controlling the seats of learning and so on. But I wanted to ask you, Max, because for me, it's quite easy. I'm a Christian. I do believe that very much that Jesus existed. And I study the Bible quite closely. And it seems to me that the Bible and the kind of some of the Apocrypha, the Book of Enoch and so on, do explain quite clearly what the deal is, who the bad guys are, why it came about, and where we're heading. So, for example, you said you're not sure who the bad guys are working for. For me, yeah, duh, it's the devil. The devil, as the scriptures tell us, is the god of this world. He's there by God's permission. He's a master deceiver. He's the prince of lies. He encourages people to live within the beast system, which, I mean, you might not call it the beast system, but that's essentially what everyone's living in, isn't it? That they are slaves.
Well, yeah, the laws of the state is the beast system. I said, you follow the God of Israel, or you follow the laws of the state. You know, they change that to Jews and Gentiles. You know.
So what I want to ask you is that's I'm just putting my cards on the table. That is my Weltanschauung, if you like. That's how I understand the world. Where it all came from, who the bad guys are, who started it all. What's your take on all this stuff? Where do you think we all came from, and why are we here, and how does it all end?
Well, I think history is a lie agreed upon, as reportedly was said by Napoleon, and it's such a lie agreed upon that we can't even confirm that Napoleon made that quote. So. Yeah. I would suggest that they have resets quite often, and they reshape things quite often. I mean, when you start looking at some of the stuff that's come out recently about a previous culture that existed on Earth, like they're calling Tartaria, free energy buildings, and the fact that there's been some sort of resets where we've had a whole layer of civilization buried right around the world. And they're finding now, you know, like across Europe, when they excavate buildings to put in new foundations, they're finding a whole layer of stuff below ground. And this is like everywhere, all across Europe, in England, in Seattle, in Melbourne, Australia, all over the place. So, I mean, I think they do these resets every now and then. I think, you know, we get to a certain point and people begin to wake up to the matrix that they're living in, and they depopulate most of the world, and then they start again. And I think they've done this over and over again. And there'd be questions of being, okay, maybe it's the Nephilim, maybe it's whatever, the angels that fell to Earth or whatever. Is there more land that we don't know about? Is the Earth hollow and there's a civilization beneath that? You know, the flat earthers think that this is a flat planet. There's stuff outside the ice wall. I mean, there could just be land that isn't on maps. The Earth could be 10 times bigger than what we think it is. We just don't know. that's why I mean about it. You know, people wanting someone to point the finger at, people saying, who are they? Who is the big controlling hand? And very often it's because they just want someone to point the finger at. Really, when you look at the situation we're in, if you want to know who's to blame, well, it's us. And a lot of it is our belief systems that is causing this problem. That's why I've said I don't think this even should be called the truth movement, because the truth is that no one knows what the real truth is. And that's the real truth that no one wants to admit. But they'll adopt these beliefs. Well, it's the Edomites. Well, it's the Jesuits. Well, it's the Jews. Well, it's this. Well, it's that. It's the Nephilim. It's whatever. And then they argue about it. You know, the earth is round. The earth is flat. The earth is a hologram. The earth is hollow. The earth is whatever. And then they argue about it. And that argument is what creates the division, which causes, you know, stops us ever establishing the freedom that we need to establish. Now, the truth is no one knows what the truth is. The truth is that all of these rabbit holes exist and all these mysteries exist because we've been lied to over generations and generations and generations. And we're in what is now essentially the apocalypse, the lifting of the veil, the great revealing. We can see now that the world is run by criminals, that everything we thought was true is based on a lie. And this gives us a huge opportunity to simply step back and disconnect and say no. You know, I don't do any religion at all, because I would suggest that everybody has their own personal connection to God. It exists within your heart. This is what the man Jesus tried to tell people. You know, you don't need religion. Jesus was essentially an anarchist. He spoke out against the system. He spoke out against the churches. He told you all have your own divine connection to the Creator. But no one really wants to believe that. No one wants to step into that. We're giving an opportunity to do that. I mean, everything that happens, the way the world's going, is because we respect authority. We do what we're told. We're prepared to step outside our moral compass in order to abide by legislation that we know is wrong. Why do we do that? When you do that, every time you comply with a piece of rule or legislation that you know is wrong, you give away a little bit more of your soul. People do this because they're scared of what might happen to me. I get put in jail. I might die or whatever. Well, dying is what you came here to do. You know, it's a given. You're going to die. Would you prefer to leave this realm with your soul intact, or are you going to give away all your freedom, give away everything that you are, turn your back on what is right and what is good and what is wholesome to simply comply with what these leaders say? Is that what life's about? Or did you come here to grow your soul, to see if you're worthy to go on to what comes after? Because this is really just the exam, I would suggest. You know, and I think, you know, we can look at all this stuff. Even if we suddenly say, okay, it's the Nephilim. Well, it's the Jews. It's the Jesuits. Well, now what? We're going to point at them and say, it's them. It's them. It's you that's doing it. Someone should fix it.
I agree with so much.
To fix it. They're not prepared to change who they are. If we would simply change our perspective, like I finish every radio show I do, every walk and talk, everything I do, I finish with the words in Lakesh, which means I am another yourself. We are simply each a thought in the mind of God. We're going through what is essentially soul purification at the moment. You haven't got it together, don't know what's going on, you're selfish, you're there, okay, take the jab, wear the mask, whatever, go away and die. And at the end of it all, there's going to be a lot of really pure hearts and really pure souls that are going to come out the other side. And I see with all the bad stuff that's happening, I still see this as one of the greatest opportunities for freedom we've ever had. Stop wondering who they are and realize the problem is us. It's our compliance with wrong behavior, which has caused this whole problem right from the very beginning, because we've been too scared to be what we really are. We've forgotten what it means to be human. That's the problem.
I agree with loads of what you say, but I think you're sort of dodging certain issues, or maybe it's just you're not like me, but when you characterize it as you say, when we have somebody like the Nephilim, we therefore have somebody to point the finger at and blame. I don't see it like that at all. I'm just really, really curious, and I would like to know.
And me too. But that was generalizing as well. Generally, the society, they don't want something that they're actually going to have to act on. They just want someone to point the finger at and complain about it. And, well, I'll watch James's show and I'll hold James's coat and James will go out and fix it for me, then send me the newsletter that everything's good now, you know?
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, I don't know whether that's a fair characterization or not. You may say that's the way that the bulk of people think, but it's not the way I think. And
it's not the way I think either. Yeah.
And I'd really like to know. I mean, you presumably agree that the truth is attainable. The truth is not just some kind of abstract concept that has no existence, that truth is just relative. You must agree with me, surely, that truth is real.
Oh, I do. But the problem is, like I'm saying, people adopt belief systems and they call it truth.
Okay.
I believe it's the Jesuits. I believe it's this and I believe it that. And that, sure. To them, that is their truth. It's like the people with small hats who seriously believe that they are the chosen people, and that is their truth.
We can agree, Max, that there's loads of people in the world who believe wrong shit for whatever reason. But we can also agree, surely, that I mean, isn't it kind of our holy mission?
But if we stop complying with wrong behaviour and we start living in Lakesh and respecting each other to have our differences of opinions, and we suddenly stop complying with wrong behaviour and never comply with anything that causes us to step outside our moral compass, then the whole system will collapse around us and the truth will become self-evident. We won't have to argue about it then. It'll become self-evident. It'll simply reveal itself. You know, if we can reveal who we are, if we can step onto our own true path and become decent human beings again, we can stop wondering. It'll become self-evident.
So I'm always curious, because I'm always curious to ask, I hope you don't mind me asking, you know, non-Christian or people who don't share my understanding of the world, I'm curious to know what their alternative vision is. So what do you think the deal is with God? I mean, do you call him the creator or what? In your version of reality,
God, the creator, the great spirit, whatever you want to call him, it's just a different name for a different thing. I mean, that's the beauty of God, is that it's a personal interpretation of what God is. And, you know, I feel a divine connection. I feel that we all have a connection to the divine.
Yeah.
And I don't personally need any book to get in the way and tell me how I should think about that. I mean, the divine speaks to you, like, through your intuition, you know?
Well, that's why I asked you that question about you see, what you called intuition, I suppose I would have interpreted, had it happened to me, as the kind of the voice of God. And I think that one of my missions as a Christian is to, through prayer and contemplation and reading the Bible and stuff, to try and get closer to God and understand what he sees as my purposes. Because I kind of think that if you're in tune with God, that's got to be a good thing. Now, obviously, you wouldn't think quite like that because you're not a Christian. But presumably, you believe that we have a moral compass, and that therefore our Creator must have imbued us with a sense of good and evil, and not an understanding that good was something we ought to move towards, and evil something away from. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're different polarizations of the one energy. I mean, you know, good can't exist without evil. If there wasn't evil in the world, how would you know what good was? You know, same as if there wasn't darkness, how would you know what light is?
But you're drawn to doing good, I imagine.
Well, you know, like I said, if you believe in a divine creator, you believe in God, whatever, well, there's one law of God, and that is do no harm. That's it. That's the only law that you need.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, having that understanding, of course you've got some sort of a moral compass. Perhaps there's people who don't have this moral compass. Perhaps they work for the other guy, you know. But, you know, I
think... people don't have a moral compass. I mean, they have a broken one, rather, it seems to me.
Well, yeah, broken one. I mean, the world gives us every opportunity to mess things up completely. I mean, you've got a chance to fuck up every single thing that you do and everything you touch. You've got a chance to become a drug addict or a prostitute or a rapist or a killer or anything. All the opportunities are there. It's your choice as to whether you do that or not, whether you choose to do the right thing or not. Yeah, and I think, like I said, you think of this as a form of soul purification. What if we all are simply a thought in the mind of God? What if God's got a little bit of baggage and needs to get rid of all that sort of stuff? Well, how do you get rid of that? You create a situation like this where you know, it's going to, a lot of the stupid people are dying off. As much as I love people and I love humans, I mean, we tried to warn them what was coming. We tried to show them there's a better way. You don't actually have to comply with legislation. You don't actually have to do what the state says. You know, if you're in your moral compass, and even their legal system is all based on canon law and biblical law and all that sort of stuff. Well, it says on page 2 of the Bible that God created man and gave man dominion over the earth. That's us. That's you and me. You know, yeah. We created society. Society created government. Government created all this legislation. These guys are way down the food chain.
I think, you know, I think the devil created government, Max.
Well,
I don't think...
probably. You know, well, maybe the devil does run the world, like you said, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So let me just briefly look at your, we're all sort of expressions of God's thoughts. You know, that like God's just got all these crazy thoughts going on. And one of his crazy thoughts is Max Egan, and another one's James Dellingpole, another one's Bill Gates. I suppose my problem with that would be, why would God have gone to the trouble of giving us this moral compass, which gives us a sense of direction in our lives, which we can choose whether or not we follow or not? Why would he have gone to the trouble of giving us that if all we really are is just kind of, you know, sort of splurgy thoughts out of God's infinite brain?
I think, like I said, it's a form of soul purification. You know, you give you every opportunity you can to go wrong. If you can think of the world like the whole concept of the energetic universe, you know, the electrical universe, you know, if God exists, which I would suggest something does exist, God, source, creator, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's kind of a grey area with people because there's so many agnostics and there's so many, you know, so you try to sort of talk about this stuff without offending anybody, you know, and giving them some sort
of
a bigger picture.
Don't worry about giving offence, Max.
Think about a bigger picture. You know, like you've got DNA in your little antenna in your body which harvests one frequency from the field that you experience as James. Well, it's another thing they've never shown us actually exists, you know. Yeah, it's another, but you've got some antenna in your body that harvests a frequency that you know as James, and I harvest a frequency that I know as Max, but ultimately it comes from the same source. It all comes from the same place. That's what I mean about everybody being simply a thought in the mind of God. You know, everything is God. Everything is alive. Everything is energy. Everything is electricity. Every thought you have is electrical. Everything, it's an electrical universe, you know? And I think that's this is a form of purification. Like I said, it's like the exam. I think the main event comes after this. This is simply the exam to see if you're worthy of going to that next place, you know?
So where do we go? Tell me.
Well, good question. I haven't been there yet. I'll try to send you a letter once I get there.
Do you think you were here before?
Yeah, I feel like I was. I have memories of other lives, and I have memories of things that happened in the past that...
Do you?
I'm really not sure if I ever did. So, yeah, I would suggest that it's a cyclic thing. I mean, who knows? Maybe there's research. Maybe, like, something interesting that I find. What I was saying before about how you're simply a frequency of consciousness that is plucked from the field because there's some antenna in your body. Think about this. I mean, with what they just did with COVID, if it's true, I mean, we've all, and many people have talked about it, how they want to put a chip in us or something and intercept that signal so they can control what your thoughts are and control your mind. If you're simply in an electrical universe and there's an antenna in your body which is downloading a frequency, which is James Dellingpole, and someone comes along and gives you a PCR, which isn't a test, it's simply sampling your DNA or sampling your biology, they take that and they put that on a computer board somewhere, so they've got that little essence of James over on that computer now. Then they come along and they give you an mRNA jab, which changes the antenna to tune it to a different frequency, like a TV station tuning it to another channel. Suddenly that energy frequency that is being harvested by your body doesn't come to your body, it goes to their computer, and then they send a signal out to your body. So they've actually hijacked the signal before it gets to your body, which is why a lot of people who've had the jab are all saying the same thing and thinking the same thing. What if they've done these resets before and they've done this many, many times over and you know, this is the result that you get? And through this whole process of growing humans, however they do, I mean, look at the Cabbage Patch Kids, look at the foundlings and all the, you know, the orphan trains, all the stuff that happened in the late 1800s. Where the world was basically repopulated by children. There were thousands upon thousands of foundlings all over Europe, and there were children being shipped across America and children being shipped out to Australia on the ships out there that they told us were all prisoners. All this stuff has been confirmed now. Now, what if that's
what
happened?
So what were they? Who were they really?
Who were what really?
The all these foundlings. What were they doing?
That's the question. Where did they come from? Why were there suddenly all these foundlings? 90,000 foundlings, like in Florence alone, in Italy in 1890. The orphan trains going out across the United States. Thousands upon thousands of children being shipped from east to west across the United States. Have you ever looked into any of this sort of stuff?
No, this Max, I'm hoping you're going to tell me. Give me the answers. I don't want questions.
Oh, there's lots of questions, brother. There's lots of questions. But it would appear the world was completely repopulated. The world was reset in the late 1800s. There was some sort of an event that buried one layer of civilization, and the world was repopulated by children. And there's just look up foundlings, look up orphan trains. You'll find all sorts of information about this. They had, like in the World's Fair in Chicago, they had the incubator baby pavilion where you could go there, and there were dozens of babies in incubators in like 1915. What are they doing there? Did they even have, we didn't know they had incubators in 1915. Isn't this a recent invention? And why were there so many premature babies in all these, that they were literally displaying them in the World Fair? They're having baby raffles in France in 1912. Just giving away children, just children everywhere. Where did they come from? Where did they come from, you know?
Well, I wonder whether the First World War was some kind of cull thing. Well, obviously it was a cull, but I wonder if there's any connection between the...
All wars are culls. I think the Great Fires, the Great Fire of London, the Great Fire of Chicago, the Great Fire of San Francisco, you find that all the major cities in the United States and most major cities in Europe all had great fires around the same time. You know, what was it really all about? What was any of this stuff all about? Why did they invent the Dark Ages and push everything back 1,000 years, you know? Some of the works of Antoni Fumesco, the books that he's put out about how the Dark Ages doesn't exist. They just simply invented the Dark Ages and put it in there so they could push everything back in time.
Is he readable? I'm going to write him down. Antoni Fumesco.
Yeah, he is. And Antoni Fumenko. It's very, very interesting stuff. I would suggest that he hasn't even got it completely right, but he's certainly added a very interesting piece of the puzzle.
I've heard about Tartaria, and I've heard about the mud floods, and I've heard about free energy, and I've heard about the world's fairs, but I've yet to have anyone sort of come up with a really coherent narrative. I mean, okay, so for example, at the moment, my bedtime listening, I listen to a tape before I go to bed. I'm listening to the works of Anthony Trollope, who was writing in the 1870s, 1880s, something like that. And I'm thinking, okay, so he would have been writing about the time that these weird, crazy things were happening. Now, was there a gap between Trollope and some sort of rift in the continuum whereby really weird stuff happened and we don't know about it? I mean, the total amnesia required for that will be extraordinary. I'm struggling to, I want to believe it, because I get that the amazing buildings were put up at these world fairs and then deconstructed. And using architectural skills that we seem to lack now, using technology that we don't credit them as having had in that period, and you're right about free energy and stuff. Have you formed? Can you give me a sort of coherent account of what you think happened?
Well, resets, like I said, it's hard to put it all together. It's hard to get anything really coherent because we've only got snippets of information, and history is a lie. You know, like that's something that really threw me when I was trying to figure all this out through my life from when I was younger, was that I always accepted the Scaligerian timeline of history. You know, that history was the way they said it happened, that this happened 100 years ago and that happened 200 years ago. And I've learned as I get older that the only thing you can actually prove is that which exists within living memory. Before that, it's very difficult to find, unless you've got families, certain families that can trace their bloodlines back, and I'm sure there's some. But it's very difficult to put together a coherent timeline. But I think that I don't think any of the technology we're using is new. The whole concept of scrying mirrors and sigils, you ever looked into scrying mirrors that witches use in their covens?
John Dee had a scrying glass, didn't he?
Yeah, the black mirror. You look in the black mirror and it tells you everything you need to know about the future and the past. And you put these sigils around your black mirror and these sigils will summon certain demons. When you look at these sigils appear to be electronic circuitry. Tribal people that I've spoken to in South America, Shipibo and stuff, they tell me that they perceive what our modern electricity as being a demon. Okay, because there's other electricity, like the Tartarian electricity, Tesla energy that he talked about, energy you can get from Mercury. Some of the old buildings you have with bells in the bell tower, then a dias in the tower with a bowl of mercury in it, they'd strike the bell and the mercury starts spinning. These were free energy devices. But when you get this electricity that we're using, which is through coal power and electromagnetism and all this sort of stuff, they say this is a demon. When you funnel this type of energy through these certain sigils, then these scrying mirrors come to life. The black mirror that tells you everything you need to know about the future and the past. These are cell phones, televisions, computer screens, the black mirror, that tells us all we need to know. We get all of our information from this. This, I think, is the Lucifer system. Lucas cipher, or Lucas light cipher code, the code that bears the light. Lucifer was the light bearer. What is light? Light is information. What gives us more information than anything? The internet. The scrying mirrors. And I don't think these legends of scrying mirrors and these certain sigils would exist if this technology we're using now had not existed before. I don't think these are little mirrors that John Dee used to look in and get some sort of a magic incantation, blah, blah, blah. I think these are cell phones. These are computer screens. I think we've done this before. We've had this technology before. And they limit us with every reset. We go more and more into the dark side. With the free energy stuff and the all electromagnetic things, sound healing. The churches were the big stained glass windows that they have, which is essentially cymatic patterns. You got all these bells. They took all the bells away and destroyed all the bells across Europe, like about 100 years ago, 120 years ago. Why was that?
Because the way that bells vibrate, it gets rid of demons, doesn't it?
It gets rid of demons, and it also works as a free energy device. When you combine sound and mercury together, it creates this spinning vortex, and you get free energy. That's why you're not allowed to have mercury. It's a banned substance. It's dangerous for you to have mercury. Actually, you've got to get incredible, jump through several hoops and get all sorts of government permissions and things to even obtain a decent amount of mercury, because they don't want you messing around with this stuff. History is a complete lie, and we're led more and more into the dark side each time they have one of these resets. And then they repopulate the world with children. They send these children all off around the place. They teach them whatever history they want, and then we end up back where we are now. And they depopulate, and they do it again. It's very hard to understand, and it's very hard to give you any type of concrete timeline to explain. Well, okay, this happened then, and then this happened. We're all still trying to figure this out. But it's a lot of information that's come to light recently. When you factor in the orphan trains and what existed in that Tartarian society, which in Tartaria isn't even the right name for it. We're simply calling it that for want of a better word. Tartaria was simply one area of the European continent. But it's really obvious that they had technology we don't have now, and that they've repopulated the world, and I think they've done it several times over. I don't think any of this technology is new. Even when you look at the underground bases that we know exist all around the world, when we're given the timeline that we're given for the Industrial Revolution, 200, 250 years ago, they started doing all this stuff, do people seriously think that they built all these underground bases in that time? Or were they already there? Is that where the foundlings came from? Is that where all this repopulation comes from? Every time, why are our cities the way they are? Why are the Paris catacombs there with all those millions of bodies in there? Why are there similar catacombs in Lima and in Greece, in Rome, in all sorts of places? There are these catacombs beneath cities with thousands and millions of bodies and bones buried in them. What happens? What happens to cause all this? We've got so many questions, more questions than answers. So, you know, in order to find out what the truth is, like I said, we've got to free ourselves from this control system. We've got to free ourselves of our belief in authority. You know, if people out there who are Christians, who do believe in God, why aren't they following that path? You know, what, how many Christians well, do you know that actually follow the path of Jesus and do what Jesus did and do what Jesus told them to do? Not too many people do. They think if they just pray and do all this stuff and believe what's in the book, then they're going to be saved. Even though they've never taken any steps to save themselves or heal the world or do anything, they simply believe that what it says in the book. You know, right. Like I said, I think we've all got our own divine connection to Source. We've all got our own divine connection to God. It's there within everybody. And what we're seeing now is an opportunity for that to come forth. And if that does come forth, I mean, we could all stand up and say, no, we're not going to do this anymore. We see you now. We see what you people are. We're not doing this anymore. Get out of the building. You're all in abusive office. You're all, you haven't even got a right to call yourself governments anymore over what you've done to us. You know, you've lost any respect you could have once had. You know, it's time for the human race to stand up. And if we were to do that, I think the truth would become self-evident. We'll never really find the answers because we're looking too deeply rather than looking within ourselves and re-establishing that connection to the divine that we all have.
Well, yeah, again, I agree with you, but here's the thing. When I want to find out about whether Paul McCartney is dead or not, I can go to Sage of Quay. You know, well, he's about to stop doing his podcast because he's been got at by the forces of darkness. They've kind of given him a hard time. But nevertheless, he's done the legwork. He knows all about the Beatles conspiracy, and you know, it's pretty much it's verifiable insofar as anyone can verify these kind of secret conspiracies, but. I haven't yet encountered any compelling source. Like, I'm hoping you can maybe point me to one. Somebody who's really looked into, who can give me a coherent account of mud floods, Tartaria, ancient buildings, free energy, bells, all the things you've mentioned. I mean, it's a great story. I'm really interested, but it's not kind of hanging together right. Now, I've got a family Bible. The family Bible goes probably what back to the, you know, the Dellingpole's going back to about 1820. There's a James Dellingpole in it. There's, you know, the dates sort of are coherent with the Normie timeline. You know, there was the 19th century and the 20th century and then the 21st. So I want to believe, because I'm into this crazy shit. You know, I love it all. I've got my mind open, but I just need somebody to just give me a bit more.
I know what you're saying. Look, I don't believe any of it either. I mean, I look at this and I see where the cards fall, and I think, yeah. Okay, well, this is a distinct possibility that this is what's going on. Yeah. But again, I don't know. I can't give you concrete proof. What I can say with a degree of certainty is that we've been lied to about absolutely everything.
I agree with that.
You know, so, I mean, and this is why I don't even really go down these rabbit holes too much anymore, because I can't give answers. I can't explain a lot of this stuff. So what I've decided would be a more rational idea is to establish the freedom to find out. Establish freedom. We've got to extricate ourselves from this control system by those that are controlling all this information that we've got. It's probably all in books in the Vatican Library and stuff, you know.
We should storm the Vatican Library.
That would be a good thing to do. But what we know is that everything is a lie, you know, and all we can do is go through and speculate on what happened. But there's all these unanswered questions which can definitely prove that history is a lie. You know, and so why are these questions there? Well, the questions are there because we're not free. The questions are there because we're just fed little snippets of information, and people don't really ask the right questions anymore. But, you know, at the moment, we're in a state of clear and present danger. We're in a state of clear and present danger, and we need to deal with that. And if we deal with that, like I said, I would suggest the truth will become self-evident. We have access to so many libraries, so many scrolls. I mean, they burned the Alexandrian Library. They burned, I'm sure a lot of the books are still in the Vatican Library. So I think there's a lot of answers there. Yeah, but like I said, people go down these rabbit holes, and I find it incredibly, I'm curious about it all as well. That's why I talk about all these topics, but I can only ever go so far on them, and I can't ever give you any concrete answers. Someone who I would suggest you talk to is a guy called Martin Liebke. He's a flat earther, which is, you know, whether you hold that against him or not.
No, but I think it's a positive.
Well, he's done a lot of work on Tartaria and piecing all the dots together.
Okay.
He's a lovely guy. He's a British guy. And I'm sure you'd have a great conversation with him. But he'd be able to give you a bit of information on this.
Oh, there's
another guy
good.
Called John Levi, who's done a fair bit of work on it. Another guy from Archaics, Jason Brashears. He's got a channel on YouTube called Archaics.
Yeah. I've heard of Jason Brashears. I've heard some of his stuff, and I'm kind of thinking, maybe I'm not ready for it
yet.
Yeah,
I know, that's what I mean. It's hard to know. It's hard to put it all together. I mean, I don't recommend anybody anymore. After being in this movement for so long, I find it very difficult to recommend anybody. I think a lot of the stuff is interesting, but I think a lot of it is distractions from the state that if we want to deal with this, and we want to find out what the answers are, we need to establish freedom right here in the modern world. You know, we've got tangible things around us that we can deal with. If we could just get some sort of a unity out of the population and something that will cause the blinkers to fall off. Well, fortunately, they've come along and they've vaccinated a lot of people, and all these stupid people are going to die off in the next few years.
Some of them, as much as I love people, family.
It's still, that's the way it goes. It was their choice. So perhaps we're going to have a lot more purity of spirit after the next few years, and there's going to be people there that want these questions answered, perhaps people who won't believe in authority so much, and perhaps we'll be able to lead ourselves into some new world of freedom.
Before we go, Max, just briefly, how is Mexico treating you?
Oh, it's good. I mean, I really miss Australia. I miss my home. I do intend to go back there at some stage.
Have you tried? I mean, you don't feel that they'll try and arrest you or something weird, or...
Oh, I don't think so. I haven't actually committed any crimes, so yeah, what could they really arrest me for?
That's
going to
be a problem for the justice system.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I just feel that I want to do it. I've got loose ends I want to tie up there. I do very much miss the place. I mean, I love my home. I love Australia. It's a beautiful country. I love where I lived. Mexico's good, but it's not my home, you know?
Have you been to Chile?
It's good. There's a certain amount of freedom and stuff here in Mexico that you don't have in a lot of other countries, and I like that. You know, this is a country that was founded on revolution, and the government can't push the people too hard. If they do, the people rise up and kill them. So that's a good attitude to have towards government, really. But I don't know if I want to stay here. I mean, I might. I don't know. But next year I intend to go back to Australia briefly anyway.
How's your Spanish?
Not very good. I know too many English-speaking people around here, so it gets very difficult to learn. Then I learn stuff. You know, I go and I learn all these Spanish words, and I figure out how to string a sentence together. And when I say it to someone, I say, oh, we got one word for that. And I go, well, why did I just go and learn all these words, you know? And because it's very, very creative language like that, you know. They've got shortened versions of everything, so... And then if I learn a whole bunch of stuff, if I don't speak it for a few days, well, I've forgotten it all. I'm at that age in my life where I don't retain that sort of... It's difficult to learn a new language at 67, you know,
it's
unless your mind is oriented towards that, you know. And I'm too busy doing other things. I'm researching, I'm doing my podcasts, I'm doing interviews like this. I mean, when have I got time to learn and practice Spanish, you know?
Yeah. Where were you in Australia?
I was in the Queensland, New South Wales border, in the border ranges area.
So south of Queensland.
Well, it's right southeast Queensland, right on the border between Queensland and New South Wales. Beautiful place, beautiful spot in the world. One of the best places in the world, really. You know, climate-wise, beautiful paradise. You know, I had surfing beaches 15 minutes away. I had a rainforest 10 minutes away. I mean, it was beautiful. So I do miss it.
Yeah. I love Australia. I mean, I think it's a beautiful country. I had a great trip there a few years ago. I'd go back in a short. Apart from the the people who run it.
Well, the tyrannical government. I mean, they incorporated in 1973. They're not even a valid government. How do you tell the Australian people that actually you don't have to do anything that these people say? They haven't written a valid law since 1973, since they incorporated, you know? But the Australian people, you know, she'll be right, mate, you know? It's all good, you know? I call the place Apathralia, unfortunately. I mean, they're beautiful people, but they're so apathetic.
Apathralia.
You know? Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Max, tell us where we can find your stuff.
Well, like I said, I'm banned pretty well everywhere. So you can go to my website, thecrowhouse.com, and you can go to The Crow House on BitChute, The Crow House on Rumble, The Crow House on Odyssey as well. But you just go to my website, thecrowhouse.com, and you'll see all the links there at the top of the homepage. It's an old HTML website. It doesn't come up good on your smartphone. You can thank me later. I've been telling people to throw away these smartphones for years, you know.
Evil.
This is a... Oh, they are so bad. I've never scanned a QR code. I've never done any of that stuff. I have a smartphone because I needed to have it in order to open a new bank account after they shut me down everywhere. But I've never made any calls on it. It never leaves the house. I just access the banking app if I need to, you know.
I try and avoid using mine, but you're right. In order to get into your bank account, you need it and all this kind of stuff. But when
they've
I turn mine
so
on...
You have to have one, you know.
I can feel the nasty electric signals going up my arm and stuff. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. I just don't use them. I had beneath my videos for 10 years, throw away your smartphone. You know, the smartphone is the new world order. I told people this back in 2012. I was telling people that the smartphone is the new world order. You know, you can't say you're fighting against the system. If you're carrying this tracking device around with you everywhere, it's listening to everything you say, everything you do, linking people up together. They're creating a digital barrier between you and the abundance of the earth. And again, it's our choice to do this. So I just don't take them anywhere. I've never owned a credit card either. So, yeah.
Max, it's been great talking to you. And
interesting conversation, brother. It's really good to just have this open-ended chat and not really know where we're going, but just talk about shit. It's been very
Max,
enjoyable.
You've just described exactly what my belief system. I think just get two people together and talk about shit. I never know where it's going to go. I never know. I just want a conversation. That's all I want.
Yeah. No, it's been very interesting. It's been great. It covered some bizarre ground. Don't even know how we got onto half of that stuff. But videos for years where I was trying to go through and find out about all this sort of stuff. And then the fires broke out in Australia, then COVID happened, and then now the genocide in Gaza. And I've got friends in Gaza. I've been to Palestine. I've been there. And I really think that they need voices speaking about that. I think we need to witness what's going on. They need our voice at the moment, which is why I've put so much attention on it. And mainly, like I said, I went there in 2012. I met the people. I've broken bread with them. These are good people. These aren't terrorists. I mean, they're mainly children. And it's not a war. It's a genocide. So put all of that other stuff, Tartaria and all these things aside for the last at least a year since the bombing of Gaza happened. And I put a lot of it aside when COVID happened because of all the smart grid and everything that was being rolled out through that. I mean, what they've gotten away with the whole scamdemic is incredible. And it's been good to come back and touch on some of that stuff. But it's stuff I haven't spoken about for a couple of years, so probably a little bit vague and convoluted in my
Max,
responses.
You are welcome back on the Delling Pod anytime.
Oh, well, yeah, we'll do it again for sure. It's been very enjoyable.
It's been great. Thanks a lot. And dear viewers and listeners, if you enjoy this, do please. I'm not yet banned from Substack and locals. You can buy me a coffee still, amazingly. Maybe they think I'm not a threat. I don't know. But anyway, thank you for your support. And those of you who don't support me, please think about it. Thank you very much again, Max Eigen.
My pleasure, brother.